The guy unlocked the door left-handed and shuffled out. Richard dropped the keys in the unflushed urinal and washed his hands again, dried them carefully with the paper towels, and left the bathroom behind him. He found the guy out in the lot, halfway between the diner door and the Cadillac. "Be real nice now," Richard called to him. "Maybe offer to wash your car or something. She'll say no, but it's a thought that counts, right? If you're creative enough, you get your keys back. Otherwise, well, you're walking home." He could see through the tinted glass that she was watching them approach, not understanding. He motioned with his hand that she should let her window down, a circular motion like winding a handle. She buzzed the glass down, maybe 2 inches, just wide enough to frame her eyes. They were wide and worried. "This guy's got something to say to you," Reacher said. He stepped back. The guy stepped up, looked down at the ground and then back at Reacher, like a whipped dog. Reacher nodded, encouragingly. The guy put his hand on his chest like an operatic tenor or a fancy maitre d', bent slightly from the waist to address the 2-inch gap in the glass.
"Ma'am," he said, "just wanted to say we'd all be real pleased if y'all would come back real soon. And would you like me to wash your car, seeing as you're here right now?"
"What?"
she said. They both turned separately to Reacher, the guy pleading, Carmen astonished. "Beat it," he said. "I left your keys in the bathroom." 4-5 seconds later, the guy was back on his way to the diner. Reacher stepped around the hood to his door, pulled it open.
"I thought you were running out on me," Carmen said. "I thought you had asked that guy for a ride."
"I'd rather ride with you," he said. The Crown Victoria drove south to a lonely crossroads hamlet. There was an old diner on the right and a vacant lot on the left, a melted stop line on the road. Then a decrepit gas station, and opposite it, a one-room schoolhouse. Dust and heat shimmer everywhere. The big car slowed and crawled through the junction at walking pace. It rolled past the school gate, and then suddenly picked up speed and drove away. Little Ellie Greer watched it go. She was in a wooden chair at the schoolroom window, halfway through raising the lid of her big blue lunchbox. She heard the brief shriek of rubber as the car accelerated. She turned her head and stared after it. She was a serious, earnest child, much given to silent observation. She kept her big dark eyes on the road until the dust settled. Then she turned back to matters at hand and inspected her lunch and wished her mom had been home to pack it instead of the maid, who belonged to the Greers and was mean. 3.
"What happened a year and a half ago?" Reacher asked.
She didn't answer. They were on a long, straight, deserted road, with the sun just about dead center above them. Heading south and near noon, he figured. The road was made of patched blacktop, smooth enough, but the shoulders were ragged. There were lonely billboards at random intervals, advertising gas and accommodations and markets many miles ahead. Either side of the road, the landscape was flat and parched and featureless, dotted here and there with still windmills in the middle distance. There were automobile engines mounted on concrete pads closer to the road. Big V8s, like you would see under the hood of an ancient Chevrolet or Chrysler, painted yellow and streaked with rust, with stubby black exhaust pipes standing vertically.
"Water pumps," Carmen said, "for irrigating the fields. There was agriculture here in the old days. Back then, gasoline was cheaper than water, so those things ran all day and all night. Now there's no water left, and gas has gotten too expensive."
The land fell away on every side, covered with dry brush. On the far horizon, southwest of the endless road, there might have been mountains 100 miles away, or it might have been a trick of the heat.
"Are you hungry?" she asked. "If we don't stop, we could pick Ellie up from school, and I'd really like to do that. I haven't seen her since yesterday."
"Whatever you want," Reacher said. She accelerated until the big Cadillac was doing 80 and wallowing heavily over the undulations in the road. He straightened in his seat and tightened his belt against the reel. She glanced across at him.
"Do you believe me yet?"
she asked. He glanced back at her. He had spent 13 years as an investigator, and his natural instinct was to believe nothing at all.
"What happened a year and a half ago?" he asked. "Why did he stop?"
She adjusted her grip on the wheel, opened her palms, stretched her fingers, closed them tight again on the rim.
He went to prison, she said.
For beating up on you?
In Texas?
She said. She laughed, just a yelp like a short cry of pain.
Now I know you're new here.
He said nothing, just watched Texas reel in through the windshield ahead of him, hot and brassy and yellow.
It just doesn't happen, she said. In Texas, a gentleman would never raise his hand to a woman. Everybody knows that. Especially not a white gentleman whose family has been here over 100 years. So if a greaseball whore wife dared to claim a thing like that, they'd lock her up, probably in a rubber room.
The day her life changed forever. So what did he do?
He evaded federal taxes, she said. He made a lot of money trading oil leases and selling drilling equipment down in Mexico. He neglected to tell the IRS about it. In fact, he neglected to tell the IRS about anything. One day they caught him.
They put you in jail for that? She made a face.
Actually, they try hard not to. A first-time thing like that, they were willing to let him pay. You know, make proposals and so forth. A clean breast and a payback plan is what they're looking for. But Sloop was way too stubborn for that. He made them dig everything out for themselves. He was hiding things right up to the trial. He refused to pay anything. He even disputed that he owed them anything, which was ridiculous. And all the money was hidden behind family trusts, so they couldn't just take it. It made them mad, I think.
So they prosecuted. She nodded at the wheel.
With a vengeance, she said. A federal case. You know that expression? Making a federal case out of something? Now I see why people say that. Biggest fuss you ever saw. A real contest. The local good old boys against the Treasury Department. Sloop's lawyer is his best friend from high school, and his other best friend from high school is the DA in Pecos County, and he was advising them on strategy and stuff like that. But the IRS just rolled right over all of them. It was a massacre. He got 3 to 5 years. The judge set the minimum at 30 months in jail and cut me a break.
Reacher said nothing. She accelerated past a truck, the first vehicle they had seen in more than 20 miles.
I was so happy, she said. I'll never forget it. A white-collar thing like that. After the verdict came in, they just told him to present himself at the federal prison the next morning. They didn't drag him away in handcuffs or anything. He came home and packed a little suitcase. We had a big family meal, stayed up kind of late, went upstairs, and that was the last time he hit me. Next morning, his friends drove him up to the jail someplace near Abilene. A club fed is what they call it. Minimum security. It's supposed to be comfortable. I heard you can play tennis there.
Do you visit him? She shook her head.
I pretend he's dead, she said.
She went quiet, and the car sped on toward the haze on the horizon. There were mountains visible to the southwest, unimaginably distant.
The Trans-Pecos, she said. Watch for the light to change color. It's very beautiful.
He looked ahead, but the light was so bright it had no color at all.
Minimum 30 months is 2.5 years, she said. I thought it safest to bet on the minimum. He's probably behaving himself in there.
Reacher nodded. Probably.
So, 2.5 years, she said. I wasted the first 1.5.
You've still got 12 months. That's plenty of time for anything. She was quiet again.
Talk me through it, she said. We have to agree on what needs to be done. That's important. That way, you're seeing it exactly the same way I am.
He said nothing.
Help me, she said. Please. Just theoretically for now, if you want.
He shrugged. Then he thought about it, from her point of view. From his, it was too easy. Disappearing and living invisibly was second nature to him. You need to get away, he said. An abusive marriage, that's all a person can do, I guess. So, a place to live and an income, that's what you need.
Doesn't sound much when you say it.
Any big city, he said. They have shelters, all kinds of organizations.
What about Ellie?
The shelters have babysitters. They'll look after her while you're working. There are lots of kids in those places. She'd have friends. And after a little while, you could get a place of your own.
What job could I get?
Anything, he said. You can read and write. You went to college.
How do I get there?
On a plane, on a train, and a bus, 2 one-way tickets.
I don't have any money.
None at all?
She shook her head. What little I had ran out a week ago.
He looked away.
What?
She said. You dress pretty sharp for a person with no money.
Mail order,
she said.
I have to get approval from Sloop's lawyer. He signs the checks. So I've got clothes, but what I haven't got is cash.
You could sell the diamond.
I tried to, she said. It's a fake. He told me it was real, but it's stainless steel and cubic zirconium. The jeweler laughed at me. It's worth maybe $30.
He paused to be. There must be money in the house, he said. You could steal some. She went quiet again, another fast mile south.
Then I'm a double fugitive, she said. You're forgetting about Ellie's legal status, and that's the whole problem. Always has been. Because she's Sloop's child, too. If I transport her across a state line without his consent, then I'm a kidnapper. They'll put her picture on milk cartons, and they'll find me. And they'll take her away from me, and I'll go to jail. They're very strict about it. Taking children out of a failed marriage is the number one reason for kidnapping today. The lawyers all warned me. They all say I need Sloop's agreement. And I'm not going to get it, am I? How can I even go up there and ask him if he'd consent to me disappearing forever with his baby? Someplace he'll never find either of us.
So don't cross the state line. Stay in Texas. Go to Dallas.
I'm not staying in Texas, she said.
She said it with finality. Reacher said nothing back.
It's not easy, she said. His mother watches me on his behalf. That's why I didn't go ahead and sell the ring, even though I could have used the $30. She'd notice, and it would put her on her guard. She'd know what I'm planning. She's smart. So if one day money is missing, and Ellie is missing, I might get a few hours start before she calls the sheriff and the sheriff calls the FBI. But a few hours isn't too much help, because Texas is real big, and buses are real slow. I wouldn't make it out.
Got to be some way, he said. She glanced back at her briefcase on the rear seat, the legal paperwork.
There are lots of ways, she said. Procedures, provisions, wards of the court, all kinds of things. But lawyers are slow and very expensive, and I don't have any money. There are pro bono people who do it for free, but they're always very busy. It's a mess. Big, complicated mess.
I guess it is, he said.
But it should be possible in a year, she said. A year's a long time, right?
So?
So I need you to forgive me for wasting the first year and a half. I need you to understand why. It was all so daunting. I kept putting it off. I was safe. I said to myself, plenty of time to go. You just agreed. 12 months is plenty of time for anything. So even if I was starting cold right now, I could be excused for that, right? Nobody could say I'd left it too late, could they?
There was a polite beep from somewhere deep inside the dashboard. A little orange light started flashing in the stylized shape of a gas pump right next to the speedometer.
Low fuel, she said.
There's Exxon up ahead, he said. I saw a billboard maybe 15 miles.
I need mobile, she said. There's a card for mobile in the glove box. I don't have any way of paying at Exxon.
You don't even have money for gas? She shook her head.
I ran out. Now I'm charging it all to my mother-in-law's mobile account. She won't get the bill for a month.
She steered one-handed and groped behind her for her pocketbook, dragged it forward and dumped it on his lap.
Check it out, she said.
He sat there with the bag on his knees. I can't be poking through a lady's pocketbook, he said.
I want you to, she said. I need you to understand.
He paused a beat and snapped it open, and a soft aroma came up at him. Perfume and makeup. There was a hairbrush tangled with long black hairs, a nail clipper, and a thin wallet.
Check it out, she said again.
There was a $1 bill in the money section. That was all. A solitary buck. No credit cards. a Texas driver's license with a startled picture of her on it. There was a plastic window with a photograph of a little girl behind it. She was slightly chubby with perfect pink skin, shiny blonde hair and bright lively eyes, a radiant smile filled with tiny square teeth.